Everybody has their Bibles open to Matthew chapter 12. That's where we're going to spend our time this morning. Appreciate the presence of everyone that's here and hope that we can enjoy our study together this morning from God's Word. One of the things I'm being persuaded of the older that I get is that we need to spend more time in the text, less topical studies, more textual studies. It's good. Topics are good. It's good to learn about prayer. I enjoyed that this morning. Look at different verses that you put together to build the entire picture of the Bible. I think we need to spend more time just reading through the Bible text, looking at everything that's in it and learning the lessons that are there. Plus, I think when we do that, we memorize things, we retain things more than when we run all over the Bible in different places. So this morning, I want to spend our time principally in Matthew chapter 19 and just these first 12 verses, because there's a lesson to be taught there. Can't imagine living in the first century and sitting with Jesus and listening to Him teach about marriage. But that day, some people learned some things about marriage from the Lord and things that we need to learn too. So I want us just to read these verses and pick up the things that are there to be learned and appreciate the truths that He taught then that are just as relevant for us now as they were in the first century. The first thing He says here in this passage, Matthew chapter 19 and verse 1, everyone look at your Bibles, is He says, "And it came to pass, when Jesus had finished these sayings, He departed from Galilee and came to the region of Judea beyond the Jordan." I noticed, first of all, that He said, when He finished these words, or when He finished these sayings. He may have been referring to the things He said in chapter 18, the statements He made like in verse 3 when He told His disciples, "Assuredly, I say to you, unless you are converted and become like children, you will by no means enter the kingdom of heaven." He may have been referring back to verse 15 of chapter 18 when He said, "Moreover, if your brother sins against you, go and tell him his fault between you and him alone. And if he hears you, you've gained your brother." He may have been referring to His statements that He was making to Peter when Peter asked Him, how often do I need to forgive my brother? In verse 21, and Jesus said to him in verse 22, "I do not say to you up to seven times, but up to 70 times seven." When Jesus finished saying these things, then He was ready, it says, to leave Galilee. Look, if you would, again in your text. "And it came to pass when Jesus had finished these sayings, He departed from Galilee and came to the region of Judea beyond the Jordan." Galilee is up there to the north. You can see it on the map. Possibly, maybe for the first 10 rows anyway. And it's up near the Sea of Galilee on the western side. Judea is down here in the south, and depending on where He started from, and He may have started from Capernaum, that's where He was in chapter 17, He could have traveled 70 miles, maybe even a little bit more, to get down to the southern region of Judea. Judea was a dangerous place. Judea was the place where Jesus' parents fled, took Jesus and left and went to Egypt. Judea was the place where John the Baptist had been arrested and had been beheaded for the teaching that he did on marriage and divorce to Herod the king. Judea was the place where Jerusalem was, which was the center of all the religious activity. It was where all the Pharisees were. And so Judea had trouble written all over it. But that's where Jesus was going. And so He went down to Judea. And it says in verse 2, large crowds followed Him. It doesn't just say crowds, it says large crowds. And they followed Him. You can tell Jesus is growing His popularity. He was a very popular person. In fact, He had a lot of influence on people. And can you imagine them following Him for 70 miles? You might not imagine that being too complicated to just get in your trucks and your cars and follow some guy 70 miles down the road. But to walk, that's a lot of walking. But you know what? I think the reason people followed Him so much is because it says that He healed them there. That Jesus cared about people. He did things to help people who were in need. And I'll tell you what, if you want somebody to follow you, just love them and care for them and do things to help them with the situations they have. And people will follow you. I'm not trying to encourage you to make followers of yourself. But people like to be with somebody who shows a genuine interest in them. And Jesus, and they followed him. And he knew to show them that he cared about them. But somewhere along the way, it says that the Pharisees met him. I don't know that they were traveling with him or if they came up from Judea. It's kind of hard to say, but somewhere the religious leaders encountered Jesus. And they did not come to follow him. They did not come to be healed by him. In fact, they would be the ones that Jesus would say, you know, that they thought that they were well, that they didn't need any help. That they came to Jesus, it says, to tempt him. If you have the King James Version, I think they came tempting him. If you have the New American Standard Version, it says they came to test him. So they're not there to seek help. They're not there to learn the truth. They're there to try to trip him up. Can I say to you practically that motives mean everything in how we approach God? Our motives mean everything in how we approach the Bible. Our motives, why we come to Jesus, mean everything. If we come with the motives to trip him up or discredit him or find contradictions or look for ways to trap him, then we'll probably come away with just exactly what we wanted. The Pharisees came to trap him, to test him, to put him to the test. And they had a question for him. The way they did that is they raised a question in verse 3 there. It says, they ask him, is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife for any and every reason? Is it lawful? Well, most likely the law that they'd be referring to is the law of Moses. That was the law that they were under. And they wanted to know from Jesus about divorce. And they wanted to know if you could divorce for every cause. Every cause. There was a popular interpretation in those days of a verse. I'm not sure where it shows up on my slides. This is it. Deuteronomy chapter 24. I put that up so you could read it. You might want to turn to it. This is the only other verse I want you to look at today outside of this text. But there was a popular interpretation of this verse that said that you could divorce for just about any reason. And I'll read this verse to you. It says, if a man marries a woman who becomes displeasing to him because he finds something indecent in her about her, and that indecent word is the critical word, and he writes her a certificate of divorce, gives it to her, and sends her from his house, and if after she leaves his house she becomes the wife of another man, and her second husband dislikes her, and writes her a certificate of divorce and gives it to her and sends her from his house, or if he dies, then her first husband who divorced her is not allowed to marry her again after she has been defiled. That would be detestable in the eyes of the Lord. Do not bring sin upon the land the Lord your God is giving you as an inheritance. So, this verse created a lot of controversy. And a lot of people wanted to believe that that indecent word was very broad. And so anything that she did that upset you was licensed to give her a certificate of divorce. And they want to know if Jesus agrees with Moses. They want to know where Jesus stands as far as what Moses said, because Jesus wasn't saying things like that. Well, I'm going to tell you that that's an interpretation of that verse, this idea that you can just divorce a woman for any cause. That's an interpretation of Deuteronomy chapter 24. And what they were really asking him is, do you agree with our interpretation of that? And if you agree with our interpretation, then you agree with Moses. That's the truth. You see that? And Jesus is dealing with that. If you don't agree with our interpretation of that passage, then you don't agree with Moses. I want to make just one point that's important for us to realize. When we read the Bible, this is truth. This is the truth. My understanding of it may be consistent with the truth. I hope it is. I hope when I read it, I understand exactly what it's saying. But my understanding is not the truth. Does that make sense? Everybody should say amen. It's just my interpretation. I want it to be consistent with what he says, but this is the truth. And sometimes we get that mixed up. Have you ever seen, I saw a wonderful presentation that somebody did on evolution one time. And they put a fossil that had been dug up on the screen. And I don't know if it was a couple of teeth and a femur or something, just a couple of bones. And then they began to put the overlays on top of it. And after that, you saw the rest of the bones come together. And then on top of that, you saw the muscles, and then you saw the skin. And before it was all said and done, you had a whole being there, a whole person. And they say, this is such and such a man. And the person that was doing the presentation peeled those things back off, and they said, no, you need to see that these four overlays were the interpretation of the original object. That was the evidence. That was the objective evidence. This is an interpretation of it, and we need to learn to distinguish between the two. And the same thing happens with the Bible. We read the Bible and we interpret a verse, and then we decide that our interpretation is the truth. And we got to be careful about that. And these Pharisees wanted Jesus to agree or to find out if they agreed with their interpretation. And if he did, then they felt like he was consistent with Moses. But if he didn't, he had rejected Moses. So Jesus responds to them in verse 4 and 5. And he says, haven't you read, or have you not read? Now that would have been kind of an insult if you were a Pharisee, because these were some of the most read people around. I mean, they knew the Bible probably a lot better than I do. I mean, they would just memorize books. They knew their Bibles very well. Haven't you read? He would be saying, don't you know? You mean you've been studying the Bible all this time and you don't know the answer to your question? Well, you should know. And so he sort of insults them there. He doesn't show very much compassion to people who don't really want to know the truth. I think you need to see that. Jesus is very compassionate. And he helps people who comes to seek him and to heal him and to want to know. But for those who really don't want to know, those who have their own agenda, those who come to him with other motives, he doesn't show a whole lot of compassion for that. So he says, haven't you read? And what he does then is he quotes to them a couple of Bible verses. And he goes all the way back to the book of Genesis. Look at your text again. Look at Matthew 19, verse 4 and 5. He says, haven't you read, he replied, that at the beginning the Creator made them male and female, and said, for this reason a man will leave his father and mother and be united to his wife, and the two will become one flesh. So he goes back to the words of the Creator when he answers them, whom Moses served. And he said, the Creator made male and female. And the Creator said, for this reason, a man will leave his father and mother and be united to his wife, and the two will become one flesh. Therefore, the joining together of a man and a woman is God's work. It's His work to do that. And so now Jesus draws his conclusion. In view of Genesis chapter 1 and Genesis chapter 2, he says in verse 6, look at verse 6, he says, therefore, they are no longer two, but one flesh. Therefore, what God has joined together, let no one separate. So what did Jesus conclude about divorce from Genesis chapter 1 and verse 27 and Genesis chapter 2 and verse 24? That if it's God's work, man has no right to put that asunder. See what Jesus was insisting to them? That you stay together. It's a pretty simple lesson. He's insisting on the permanency of marriage. Don't divorce. And I think we can learn how to read the Bible a little bit in this. We learn a little bit about interpreting or in understanding the Bible. When Jesus read Genesis chapter 1 and Genesis chapter 2, I want you to notice that he sees in God's positive statement that he made the male and female and made the two to be one, he saw in that positive statement a prohibition against anything other than what God said. You see that? God didn't say, thou shalt not divorce. And there's a lot of stuff in the Bible about divorce. But he didn't say, thou, you can't divorce. Say anything about that. He said what God joined together. Or he said, God said, made the two one flesh. And that by itself prohibited anything other than that. And so when you marry, you know, I like this analogy somebody made in a book. I don't remember where I read it years ago. To Hernando Cortez, who went to the Aztecs, took his ships down there, a bunch of ships, landed, and all of his men got off the boat, started to go inland. He sent somebody back. And they burned his ships. Because he knew that ahead of him lay all kinds of trouble, all kinds of difficulties, all kinds of things that they would not know to anticipate. But he knew one thing, there's no going back. You can only go forward. And we kind of need to have that application about our marriages, that when we say I do, we need to burn our ships and say there's no going back. Because Jesus said, what God has joined together, let no man separate. Our generation, just the exact opposite. You know, we're familiar with that. You know, our generation says, well, we can try it, and if it doesn't work, we can just get out of it. Well, I guess you can. I guess you can go and get you a legal divorce. But you're going to be in trouble with God, the Lord would say, because Jesus said, don't divorce. Genesis 1 and Genesis chapter 2 said, what God has joined together, let no man separate. Divorce is a sin. And Jesus hadn't even got to remarriage yet. He's just talking about the subject of divorce. Malachi chapter 2, most of us have read that passage. Malachi 2 and verse 16 says God hates divorce. The Creator said, what God joined together, let no man separate. And so that needs to be what we think when it comes to this subject about divorce. Now, Moses had something to say. The Pharisees had something to say about that. They liked to debate things. They weren't going to let Jesus get off that easily just by quoting those verses. So they tried to show a discrepancy. So they say, well, verse 7, why then, they asked, did Moses command that a man give his wife a certificate of divorce and send her away? So they are going to contend with Jesus. And Jesus replies to them. And he says, Moses permitted you to divorce your wives because your hearts were hard. But it was not this way from the beginning. I think the King James Version says Moses suffered you to put away your wives. He made a concession. But the reason is because they were hard-hearted. In other words, they were going to do it anyway. And so he tried to do something to slow down their determination to divorce their wives. And I want you to notice that he points to the problem that led to that concession. They had hard hearts. The same hard hearts that had characterized the people, you know, in Moses' day were characterizing the people in Jesus' day. So be careful that we don't find ourselves guilty of the same thing. The kind of hearts that's determined to do what we want to do, and if we have to, we might even manipulate Scripture and use it to serve our own purposes, to be able to do our will and not God's. Notice how Jesus concluded that response. He said, from the beginning, it was not supposed to be like this. From the beginning. He goes back again to Genesis chapter 1, to what God originally said. Just remember the FTB plan, the from the beginning plan. One of the things that John, I'm not going to go on a long bunny trail here, but one of the things in 1 John that he does whenever Christians were having a hard time discerning who was the Christians and who weren't, because there were a lot of false teachers and a lot of false Christians. One thing he kept saying to those Christians is, what did you learn from the beginning? What did you learn from the beginning? And he kept sending them back there. You can count just over and over throughout that little five-chapter book how many times he kept sending them back to the first things that they learned. Because that was the truth. And anything that departed from that original teaching was not the truth. And so Jesus said, yeah, Moses made a concession. Because you were hard-hearted and you were determined to do things your way. But from the beginning, God did not approve of that. So Jesus' point here is interesting. People spend so much time on who has a right to remarry. That's what people like to talk about. Jesus' point is, divorce is wrong. It was not that way from the beginning. And he's still on that point, that divorce is wrong. Matthew chapter 19 and verse 9, Jesus continues and makes another statement. Matthew chapter 19 and verse 9. He says, and I say to you, whoever divorces his wife except for sexual immorality and marries another commits adultery. Whoever marries her who is divorced, commits adultery. I would like to suggest to you what Jesus' main point is here, is that divorce can lead to adultery. he's still trying to show that, discourage them from divorce. You know, there's this passage is debated so much. And there's so many articles on it. And there's so many debates among brethren about this. But you know, I think any literate adolescent teenager can read this verse and come to an easy conclusion about what it is. It's not really that complicated. That he's saying anyone who divorces his wife and marries another commits adultery, unless he puts his wife away for fornication. And in that case, he's allowed to remarry. And he repeats that in Luke chapter 16 and verse 18. Just compare the two. Matthew 19, I tell you that anyone who divorces his wife except for sexual immorality and marries another commits adultery. And Luke 16 verse 18 says anyone who divorces his wife and marries another woman commits adultery. He doesn't mention the exception, but he makes the point. And the man who marries a divorced woman commits adultery. And so the point here is not really about who can remarry, is it? It's about the consequences of divorce. And it is that most times, almost every case except one, it leads to adultery. The man who puts away his wife for another reason than fornication and remarries, he commits adultery. And the woman who was put away when she remarries, then the person who marries her, they commit adultery. And it's simple as that. And so Jesus is trying to discourage divorce. And he's showing that divorce, most of the time, is going to lead somebody to an adulterous relationship if we're not careful. So the disciples look at that, and they see the weightiness, I think, of that teaching. And so they say in verse 10, let's see what I put. Okay, so I put emphasis is not on who can remarry, but rather don't divorce. That's what Jesus wants to emphasize. And then Matthew chapter 19, verse 10 through 12, the disciples respond to that, and they say, if this is the situation between a husband and a wife, it is better not to marry. Well, maybe they're saying, and this is kind of how I've understood it before, it's just better not even to get married. You know, if it's that way, that you know, if you can't divorce except in the case of adultery, then you wouldn't want to get stuck with a lemon. So it's just better not even get married. Others have suggested maybe they're saying not to remarry if you're divorced. It's just better not even to get remarried if you're in that situation. Because in all cases, except for one, it would be an adulterous relationship. But regardless of which they mean, they see the danger in it. They see that this is a dangerous situation, that adulterers and fornicators, God will judge. And so Jesus makes his final remark in verse 11 and 12. He says, not everyone can accept this word, but only those to whom it has been given. For there are eunuchs who were born that way, and there are eunuchs who have been made eunuchs by others, and there are those who choose to live like eunuchs for the sake of the kingdom of heaven. The one who can accept this should accept it. Jesus says not everybody will hear this. Not everybody will accept this. And he gives a couple of worldly circumstances where men give up the right to marry or have it taken away from them based on either some physical situation or on the kingdom of heaven. And I want you to focus on these two phrases at the beginning and the end, where he says, not everyone can accept this word, but only those to whom it has been given. And the one who can accept this should accept it. And it's interesting because he refers to Matthew chapter 13. I like Matthew 13 verse 11 and 12, where he says, uses the similar phrase. Matthew chapter 13 verse 11 and 12. He had been speaking in parables, and he says to his disciples in verse 11, because it has been given to you to know the mysteries of the kingdom of heaven, but to them it has not been given. For whoever has, to him will be given, and he will have more abundance. But whoever does not have, even what he has, will be taken away from him. Therefore I speak to them in parables, because seeing they don't see, and hearing they do not hear, nor do they understand. I think what he's kind of making the point here is that the one to whom it's been given, he's the one who has ears to hear. He is the one who will listen. He is the one who has the good and honest heart. And it's the same thing here in Matthew chapter 19. The people that will accept his teaching are the ones who have ears to hear, to whom it has been given. And they have the honest and good hearts. But those who have not those kind of hearts, they won't receive it. They won't be able to accept this teaching. So I want to suggest to you that it's really, in one sense, one more of a heart issue than it is a doctrinal issue in this case. That these Pharisees came and they set out to test Him. They set out to tempt Him. But instead he puts them to the test. He puts His own disciples to the test. What kind of ears do you have? How do you listen? How do you hear what I've said about marriage and divorce? I think it's interesting, if we'd had time to study it, and we're not going to take time obviously this morning, but if we read through all of this chapter, it's just interesting to see who Jesus accepts and who He rejects. He rejects the religious leaders here at the beginning. These men who are so learned and so studious and who would presume to be the great pillars of the truth. He rejects them. He later will reject His own disciples. Later the children will come to Jesus, and the disciples will rebuke them and try to send them away. And Jesus will scold His disciples, and He'll say, "Let the children come to Me." He rejects the Pharisees, He rejects His own disciples, and then He accepts the children because they had the good and honest hearts. They are the ones who really came seeking and wanting to know. Later He'll reject a rich young ruler who was a good man, but he wasn't willing to give up his possessions. And then later, at the very end, in Mark chapter 10's version, He accepts a blind man who says, "I just want my sight." It's interesting who Jesus rejects and who Jesus receives. And almost 9 times out of 10, if not all the time, it's about the heart. It's about people who really wanted to know, the people who had ears to hear what He said. So this morning, that's our lesson. Just Matthew chapter 19. Verse 1 to 12, Jesus is teaching on marriage. We live in a time where we have to defend the faith. I guess there's always been that time when there's false teaching that's given. And we just need to read what Jesus said. He's not complicated. It's not about that the truth is hard to understand. It's about hard hearts. It's about where our hearts are. Our generation probably is not a whole less wicked than the one that Jesus lived in. But we want to be an exception to that. We want to be people who pursue the truth and listen and have ears to hear. And if we don't understand, we follow Jesus like the apostles and keep asking the question, "Can you explain this a little bit better?" We want to know. We want to know what the truth is. And so that, I think that distinguishes who the disciples of Jesus are from those who are not. Those who want to know the truth on whatever the issue is, and those who are ready to change to accept what Jesus says. And throw out what they concluded for themselves. Well, let's get our songbooks out. In just a minute, we're going to sing our song number 285. Zion's Call Sweetly Rings. It's an invitation for people to come to the Lord and to follow Him. That we need to walk after Him, walk after His teaching and after His example, and follow Him to Zion, to the place that He comes from, so that we can be with Him forevermore. This morning, if you want to do that, be baptized into Him for the forgiveness of your sins. Won't you stand, come forward as we stand and sing our song.